It's the Pulse of New Hampshire. I'm J-Dog, and joining me right now is a true renaissance man. In addition to being an athlete and an advocate for education as well as above the neck health and wellness, he is also an entrepreneur. He is also a swell dresser, a doting grandfather, a loving husband, and a fantastic father. Also a baseball awards presenter, an avid skier when the season allows it, the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. He is Eddie Papowski's number one fan, Mr. Tom Raphael. Tom, how are you today?
Wonderful, Jay. And you are really good at what you do. So thank you. And I am going to try to get one more ski run in before it's officially spring. But it has been kind of an odd winter for sure. Before I introduce today's guest, I want to thank last week's guest, Sharon McCarthy of Girls Inc., who did a great job explaining what Girls Inc. does for developing leadership skills for girls and young women. So the wonderful thing, as you know, Jay, about this show, it affords us an opportunity to get important topics out there, world health, mental health, as well as different nonprofit organizations. So I'm honored today that I have Patricia Carty with me, who is the president and CEO of the Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester. Patricia, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom. It's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, we're honored to have you. So take your time and give the audience background on your career. And I always get the comment, people like to know more about the guest. And then what led you to have passion to help people with mental illness?
Sure. So my career here at the Mental Health Center, I have to say that I've been here my entire career. So this is my 38th year at the Mental Health Center.
38 years?
Yes. Wow.
We have a lot of employees here that have worked 40, 38, right? So that's terrific. I salute you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I started here right with my undergraduate. I went to the University of Vermont and got my bachelor's in psychology and started at the Mental Health Center working in one of our residential programs, overnights. And since then have gone back to school, got my master's degree and my certification, and have really been afforded a lot of opportunity here at the Mental Health Center, and have advanced my career throughout the years, and then became the CEO in 2022. So I'm approaching my second year as the CEO.
So tell us what the last 2 years as CEO, what the last 2 years has been like. We're coming on the heels of sort of finishing up with COVID, although that's never ending. And the difference between being one of a few senior leaders and the actual final decision maker. Tell us what that experience is like.
Yeah, so I was the chief operating officer during the COVID pandemic. And so coming out of that pandemic with what I would consider a heightened need for mental health services, a community that was really struggling, kids who were back in school, but not quite acclimated again, and just a really high demand. It has been challenging from an access standpoint and making sure that we're getting people in a timely way and that we are integrating ourselves in the community in a way that makes access easy. It's also been a big transition for me. And as you said, being the person making the final decisions on things, we have been managing the after effects of COVID, not just from a clinical standpoint, but really from a finance standpoint, because the unwind that occurred when the public health emergency ended, the Mental Health Center really serves people. 80% or more, a little more of our people that we serve have Medicaid. And so the unwind resulted in a disenrollment of many of our patients. And we have been working on that over the past year since last March. It has been a huge struggle for us financially and a huge struggle for our patients, many of whom remain uninsured, and we're helping them with that process. So, and that process has been happening month over month and will continue through this fiscal year. So,
and just for the listening audience, the VAT unwinding process and Medicaid, I know on the, we put in, as you know, an adult dental Medicaid program, and it started with 120,000 in April of 2023. And then through the Medicaid eligibility process is now 90,000. But in the meantime, those, you know, as you meant, those, in this case, those 30,000 people do need to see dental care. And I'm sure that, you know, they, if you need mental health services, you're going to need it, whether you're, you know, covered by insurance or Medicaid or not. So I know you're the CEO, and before that you were the operating chief operating officer, but in general, can you tell the audience what it's like, you know, working on, you know, on this topic? And as you, I think, you know, like after oral health, this is oral health, mental health, and early learning is like my bag too. Like, you know, I work with Justice Broderick on the Change Direction program. We support NAMI. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had a thought leadership group talking about all the different things going on, you know, in mental health. Of course, you know, the press, you see a lot about suicide and drug addiction, but as we know, the and that's real too, but there's also, you know, kind of a big silent component of, you know, of mental health. You know, the when I go out with John Broderick, I realize this, but like the, you know, the star athlete who everybody thinks is perfect in high school, but is secretly suffering with, you know, with something. So in any event, so you're around that environment. How would you describe what the experience is like?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's, you know, you alluded to is sort of the stigma that remains around mental health issues. And for some, it's, you know, shame-based. For others, it's, you know, there may be the lack of ability to get assistance. For me, it's always been an area that I have always been interested in. And I think that what we all know is that, you know, someone's mental health, someone's well-being, mental well-being is critically important as just a component of health. And the effects that it can have physically on someone. I think for anyone who knows people with severe and persistent mental illness, they die 25 years younger than the general population. There's a lot of work that's being done to really create a system here that is focused on integrated care, being able to get care that is both health, you know, physical health, mental health, substance misuse, all in an integrated fashion, to get the best outcomes you can for people who struggle with one or more of those things. You know, being around, I think, you know, we have really attempted to make sure that anyone can access us and that clinicians from the mental health center are in spaces that are non-traditional. So making sure that we have clinicians at the schools, at summer camps, at MPAL, doing diversionary work with juvenile justice, being in, you know, offering physical health care in partnership with Amiskik Health right at the mental health center. So having, being able to get your care all in one place, offering medication-assisted treatment for people with opiate disorders, or Vivitrol treatment for people with alcohol disorders, all under one roof. It's really changed since the time that, from when I started. You know, we didn't really think about it in that way. We had one lane, and that was mental health. And we didn't really cross those things over. But now we're really trying to provide care in a way that is comprehensive for people.
So that holistic approach is, of course, needed, the whole ecosystem. So how would you view, what's the, there's probably many, but what do you think are the top one or two challenges facing the mental health system, you know, availability of therapists and professionals, just what you say, tying the whole system together. What do you see as the top challenge facing the mental health system?
So I think right now, and if I think about our own strategic plan, one of our goals is really strengthening our workforce. We have a serious challenge around a deficit in workforce of clinicians, of bachelor-level staff, primarily the people who actually provide the care. That's where our deficit is. And really, I think in a lot of ways, our pipeline has dried up a little bit. That comes from, you know, I think a variety of things. COVID, really, we had a drop off during COVID of staff leaving for various reasons. We also had, I think, you know, I work in a community mental health system that has been underfunded for a lot of years, and therefore it's earning a living wage, even when you have a bachelor's degree, is a challenge. So it's definitely our workforce is our greatest challenge.
And just for a minute before our break, I always get this question from the audience. How is the Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester funded? Where do you get most of your funding?
So as I mentioned earlier, the majority of our funding, 80% or more, is Medicaid revenues. So people who really are disadvantaged, poor, that's our core mission. Our folks that really need our services. That's the general. The rest is grants and state contracts for the most part.
That's great. And so people need to know that, of course, you know, Medicaid is, you know, the safety net, and the reimbursements aren't always necessarily, you know, state of the art. But as you point out, it's better than being completely uninsured. But it's some amazing work that you do. Jay, I could go on for hours, but I know I can't, Jay. So
yeah, we'll just have to take a quick break. We'll get to more of it. Trust me.
Okay, good.
Patricia Carty is the president and CEO of Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester. You can go to mhcgm.org. You can also call 603-668-4111. Again, the number 603-668-4111. When we return, more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio here on the Pulse of New Hampshire. This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. I am J-Dog, and this week's guest on Northeast Delta Dental Radio is Patricia Carty. She is the president and CEO of Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester. You can go to mhcgm.org or can call 603-668-4111. And Tom and Patricia carrying the conversation on about mental health, as well as the Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester, and making donations and the like, which you can do on the website, by the way. You can donate and just go on to mhcgm.org.
Thanks, Jay. And preparing for the show, Patricia, I spent a lot of time on your website, and it is fabulous. And this, let me give a shout out for that. But also, everybody needs to know, as Patricia said, you know, the funding that they get from Medicaid probably is, you know, less than 80% of what it needs to, you know, to run. So donations are welcome. Obviously, they'll do grants. But the other thing that's interesting on the website is some of the human interest stories. I know I was one of the STEM judges for the Miss New Hampshire Scholarship Program, and I know that was a component. It was quite moving, Brittany's story. So in any event, thanks for all you do. So we hear a lot that it takes a long time to get access to a therapist. One, is that factually true? And two, what do you suggest families do in the interim if there is a couple month waiting period?
Yes. So I think there definitely is validity to the wait time issue. I think that is a workforce issue. And we definitely have longer wait times than we would like. We are working toward, actually, by July 1 of this year, we'll be transitioning into what's called an open access system so that people can show up any day of the week, Monday through Friday, and get seen on that day for service. So this is something that we've been working toward, and am happy to report that both in our children's department and in our adult department, by July 1, that will happen. Until then, we've set up some strategies to help people while they're waiting. They might get an appointment time and then it's 2 months out. We've hired some bachelor level case managers to help the families, have them available to the families during that wait time. If needed, people can be seen by clinicians in our interim care department, which is part of our emergency services department. Definitely in emergency situations, people can call the 988 number and our rapid response team here at the Mental Health Center will respond to those calls. And so, and we also have some engagement folks that are contacting people during that wait time just to check in and make sure that there isn't anything that our individuals or our families need. So we've tried to do some things to mitigate the wait. It's not perfect and it's not ideal, but we recognize that we need to be checking in with people, making some caring contacts so that people know that we're here in case they need us.
Thanks for that update on, and congratulations on the open access initiative. Has telehealth helped? Most likely during the height of COVID, there was a lot of that going on and no one wanted COVID, but I'm assuming some of the techniques learned during COVID in terms of telehealth we've, you know, extended. Has that helped the situation at all, telehealth?
Yes, it certainly has. I mean, I think that when there's easy accessibility for once you're in treatment with telehealth, it's allowed us to retain some staff who may have moved and want to continue working at the Mental Health Center. So that's been really great for us. I think the other thing is that it's really allowed for engagement of people who otherwise may not have really made it in an in-person system. People with severe anxiety disorders, for instance. People who are struggling with social determinants of health, meaning that they lack transportation or childcare, and that would always get in the way. Telehealth has really opened the door for people who don't have easy access to getting somewhere. It also keeps people from missing appointments. So if you have a mom whose childcare falls through, she can still have her appointment through telehealth if she can't make it into the office. So it allows us that flexibility. We still have a significant amount of telehealth going on here at the Mental Health Center. And we try to do it by patient choice. So some people prefer it to in-person, some people like a mix, and some people really prefer in-person. So we're able to provide a level of flexibility that is a bit of a silver lining to the COVID pandemic, because we really provided no telehealth prior to that.
Yeah, so that is indeed probably the only silver lining coming out of COVID.
Right, exactly.
Definitely. It's enabled also different, you know, work hybrid environments. As you said, it probably helped your staffing issues. So you mentioned anxiety. This, of course, is also depression, and you've mentioned telehealth. But what are there other alternative treatments at your organization that people should be aware of if you're suffering from anxiety and depression?
Sure. So I think that, you know, the Mental Health Center, first of all, is very focused on providing evidence-based treatments. So we want to be providing the best there is, and especially in terms of psychotherapy for our patients. So we have evidence-based practices that are specifically for kids, and then those that are for adults. So certainly cognitive behavioral therapy for anxiety disorders is quite important. We certainly have very focused strategies for people with PTSD and cognitive processing therapy. Is something that we have seen great outcomes with in a much shorter period of time. We also, about a year and a half ago, brought on a new line of treatment for depression, which is transmagnetic stimulation. And that is really for people who have not responded well to medication or medication and therapy combined. And this really is a more direct treatment that really works to stimulate particular parts of the brain to relieve depression. It's much more intensive in the sense that it's a daily treatment for a period of time. But our chief medical officer, Dr. Ash Saxena, is the person who really heads up that treatment here at the Mental Health Center. And we are starting to see some good outcomes from it for people who otherwise have really had little relief from depressive symptoms.
Wow, that's promising. Congratulations. Now, you also, I think, have a whole division dedicated to service for children and teens. Can you share some of the ways your team is supporting current needs of our young population?
Sure. So, yes, we have an entire department, a few levels of care. So we provide outpatient services for kids and teens, but we also provide a lot of community-based services to them, in-home services. Our system really works with families. We don't just work with the child who has been denoted as having some mental health challenges or emotional disturbance. And so we're very family-focused. But we also know that we need to be in other natural environments. So having clinicians from the mental health centers across our schools is pretty important. So we have clinicians across, I think at this point, we're in 14 or 15 schools in the Manchester and area and surrounding towns. So do provide services in Londonderry. And that's across both elementary, middle school. And in the last year, we received a grant from SAMHSA that has now allowed us to expand into the high schools. And so that's been pretty exciting to be a part of that. We also had a collaboration with the Department of Education over the last several years. And this was really in response to the challenges kids were having during the COVID pandemic. We began having the ability to have some of our clinicians on site at summer camps. So kids who would otherwise not be able to attend, be asked to leave, can have support right at the summer camp so that they can really effectively be able to have this same experience as other kids, even though they may have some challenges. And that has just grown. We started out with one summer camp. Last year, we were in five, and we're going to have more in the future. Been asked to work with the Y and others in the future.
Amazing. And of course, we do a lot ourselves with school-based programs. And as you say, you have to take the holistic approach, the children, their moms and dads and other family members. So that's terrific. We're running out of time, but you'd mentioned earlier how people with serious mental illness have a shorter lifespan, and your organization owns a practice called In Shape. Can you tell us what In Shape is all about?
Sure. So In Shape was really designed and actually was the idea of a gentleman named Ken Ju, who was the CEO of Monadnock. And Ken ended up selling us In Shape. And In Shape really is, it's like having your own health mentor, a person with mental illness. That person works with you on exercise, works with your doctor as well, but on exercise, nutrition, smoking cessation, and health goals. Basically, it's like having your own personal trainer, but someone who's really skilled at being able to motivate people who have mental health challenges, who might feel unmotivated in a greater way. It's also about social inclusivity. It's about really working with someone as you would with anybody else, and forgetting about the stigma of mental illness, but I'm your trainer and we're going to the gym and we're going to tackle these problems.
I love it because people can understand that. And I'm glad Ken's program lives on. Jay, like I said, we could spend hours here with Patricia, but we'll have to get her on again. But why don't you give out the website and phone number?
Okay, will do. And the website is mhcgm.org. That's a Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester. Number is 603-668-4111. Again, 603-668-4111. Patricia Carty, President and CEO of Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester, the guest this week on Northeast Delta Dental Radio, which, as Tom alluded to, sadly, we have to move on. Not to worry. We'll have another edition down the line of Northeast Delta Dental Radio right here on the Pulse of New Hampshire.